Okay, good morning. This is a meeting of the Board of Public Works, and today is October 5th, 2011. I understand we are, well, before we get to, I understand that we have Dr. Marty Smith from Anne Arundel Community College, who is going to hopefully be talking to us shortly. She's been a tremendous leader for 18 years as the college president. Wow, that's great. And so we're going to be hearing from her shortly. Before we get there, let me ask the comptroller if he has any opening remarks and the treasurer.
Thank you, Governor. Whether anyone noticed that the Sunday, both the Redskins and the Ravens won. And for my dear friends out in Western Maryland that root for the Steelers, they lost. But I always find that to be a boost for the state. When both teams win, it's maybe part mental, just people feeling in a better mood, but I like to think that it also helps the economy also, because people are more upbeat. And in addition to the football teams, we had a huge win last week that I'd just like to compliment a local team for, and that's Anne Arundel Community College, which was named the leader of a national consortium of community colleges. It's going to receive a $20 million grant from the U.S. Department of Labor to lead a 10-college effort to provide training for high-demand jobs in science, technology, engineering, and math, the STEM fields that we've all made such a top priority. What I like about this is that Anne Arundel Community College, not like Ohio State or something, is picked number one out of 1,100 community colleges across the country to be the leader of the consortium, develop programs and certifications in the fields of cyber technology and mechatronics. Everyone know what mechatronics is? I didn't. I had to ask. It's the combination of mechanical engineering with electrical engineering, a new field that our businesses need trained staff for. I think it's a testament, frankly, to the college's 50 years of educational excellence, and the governor mentioned the extraordinary leadership team headed by President Martha Smith. And I'd like to congratulate the college's Board of Trustees, which is a distinguished group that includes my dear friend and colleague, Jerry Klassmeyer, sitting next to me. I just think it's important because we read about the downturn in federal grants because of the economic situation. And here we have Anne Arundel, an unrelenting pursuit of a federal opportunity, which is tremendously cost-effective, and I think it's a perfect example of how government can assist the private sector in the job creation process. Private sector identified the need for a highly skilled workforce for STEM businesses. Public sector made a focused strategic investment to help produce that workforce, and then government gets out of the way. I emphasize that again. We make the investment, then government gets out of the way and lets the private sector create the jobs that our people need. And in this area of cybersecurity, I know some of you may have read in the morning paper about the new hearings that are going on Capitol Hill. Cybersecurity is not just a national security issue. First and foremost, it is an economic issue because countries like China are using cyber intrusion in order to steal all of our economic interests. And it's a huge threat, much more so than the military threat of cybersecurity, is the economic threat that China and other countries are doing and just brazenly, openly giving medals to their people who accomplished this theft of our design and our patents. So I'm delighted that Anne Arundel Community College with Dr. Smith is going to be defending our country with this new effort. I also went to a related area to the Dorchester Career and Technology Center last week in the Lower Shore. This project was a top school construction priority for the state and the board. We made an investment. The center's training students in specific skills in areas that are sorely needed and high demand locally. I can't remember the name of the company that was right next to this school, but they're the world's largest producer of conveyor belts. Who would have thought it down there in the Lower Shore, 100-year-old company? Well, turns out that they have a whole new business that they've opened up, which is places like New York love to put these industrial belts on the outside of buildings. It's considered the chic new design thing. Makes everything look, I don't know how it looks, but they are hiring people left and right. Where are they hiring people from to do the welding and do the machine work? Right out of Dorchester Career and Technology Center. So that's a great example of education aligning with local economy. And there are direct investments that we make that foster job creation. A lot of people complain about government spending. I say you have to look at the specifics. It's a major difference between indiscriminate government spending and strategic public investment. And these investments that we're seeing today will reap major dividends for our state in the future, and I'm delighted that we're an international leader in the STEM industry workforce development, and obviously in the cybersecurity that the governor has highlighted so appropriately over the last year. And Governor, I think it's good stuff. And I compliment, I should mention Congressman Ruppersberger, who's on the House Intelligence Committee, who will be involved in this cybersecurity effort. And Governor, I don't know whether it's appropriate to have Dr. Smith come up and say a few words about the success she had.
Sure. Let's see. I think the Treasurer wants to chime in and sing her praises before we do that.
Okay.
Not a great length, but I did want to recognize Dr. Smith, one of the very first women presidents of community colleges in Maryland when she started off in Baltimore County, came to Anne Arundel County. After leading Anne Arundel County, the college was named the number one community college in the United States of America and has produced outstanding scholars and citizens. I'm sure she will be going on to bigger and even better and greater things, but the state of Maryland owes a great vote of thanks to Marty Smith for all the work she's done for all of us. And I just was so pleased to see her here and to hear about her latest triumph. I'm glad you've not allowed the Deputy Comptroller, Mr. Klassmeyer, to go on, because he will go on for hours about how outstanding Dr. Smith has been. But it's very, very good to have an opportunity to recognize her in public.
And with that, Dr. Smith, President Smith.
Thank you very much. You want me to
Your Majesty.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much. Good morning to all of you. I will be very brief. I actually didn't plan to really do any kind of an overview of this. I will say to you, we at Anne Arundel Community College are thrilled about this grant. It was exceedingly competitive. I do think, in being in touch with most of my colleagues, I think about every community college in the country applied. My key message is really a very genuine thank you. Thank you very, very much. As the comptroller said, and I think he did an excellent job of giving an overview of this grant, Secretary Solis chose to spend the day with us last Wednesday to make this announcement and to visit our cyber classrooms and talk with our cyber students. As I said to her, I think this grant is an absolutely perfect example of how it is supposed to work. For example, the private industry several years ago came to our Board of Trustees and said, we know we need many, many more people trained in the STEM areas, and particularly cyber. And our board said, Dr. Smith, make this happen. So we at the college put together a plan and went to the county executive
county executive said, yes, indeed, this is a high priority. The workforce is growing in this area, and we have a critical shortage of workers. And he said, give me a plan and a budget. We gave him a plan and a budget. He included it in his budget. The county council saw that it was very important. They, too, acknowledged this is something that has to happen, and they approved the budget. At the same time, you all, and Governor, with your leadership, said STEM is a priority for the state, as is cyber. And so you, through MHEC and others, made competitive grants available to the community colleges and universities to increase the pipeline to STEM-related jobs and careers. So those came together, and I'm proud to say as a result of those efforts at Anne Arundel Community College, our enrollment in STEM programs increased 46% from FY07 to FY11. We have 7,816 students enrolled in STEM-related programs. Mm-hmm. So this grant kind of builds on that success and the capacity that we have built as a college and really as a state. We're building on that to help deliver that nationally. And then in turn, to get from other colleges their expertise in some of these other areas like mechatronics, and environmental technology. So in my mind, it's a perfect example of how things are supposed to work in order to invest in our people and our workforce and our state. So my primary message to all of you is thank you so much for facilitating and making this possible. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
I have a question, Marty.
Sure.
I know this has not been going on a long time, but is there a way to track the people once they graduate from the program to see, in fact, that they did enter the workforce in the sort of position that they had been anticipating?
Yes, that's done. There is a way. It's not a very sophisticated way, to be honest with you, and we're working at how to make that more sophisticated. MHEC does do some work through graduate follow-up and does surveys of employers of our graduates. Mm-hmm. Most of the tracking that we do is done through the programs. So the engineering program or the cyber program does its own tracking of graduates too.
I assume you do it for fundraising purposes also.
We absolutely. Excellent point, yes. And we have had such active and energetic participation by the private sector. It's been wonderful, both in helping us with the curriculum and in hiring. I mean, they're waiting. They're in line waiting for our people. So thank you very much.
Terrific.
Thank you again for this. And I know you're with us until next August.
Yes.
And if you could just keep us informed about how this process goes, and if you could possibly touch base with Congressman Rupersberger, who's the ranking member of the Intelligence Committee,
yes.
I think he'd be interested in all this. And again, just following on what the Treasurer said, thank you for always putting students first. Whenever I go to anything over there or hear of any event at your college, you're always there, front and center. Mm-hmm. And just hats off, because
you
really put the kids first. And
thank you.
Frankly, then a lot of these students are not kids anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But students first, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Marty, could I just, because this may be the only opportunity here, and I don't want to embarrass you, but I think I mentioned that Dr. Smith was one of the first women to head the community college here. The fact of the matter was, until her appointment, the boards of trustees, which were mostly experienced gentlemen not of color, had not given thought to a minority or a woman in that sort of executive position. And I wasn't sure that Dr. Smith had given it enough thought either. And it was only because a group of women got together and realized we needed a role model. So I'm mentioning this because it extends even beyond Anne Arundel Community College, a role model for women in academia everywhere, somebody who could take on the tough job as the head executive of a campus, and she was persuaded to do that. She did it extraordinarily well and has gone on to great things. But it just shows that everybody, you know, needs a model and everybody needs to push.
I remember that encouragement. It was a group to whom you could not say no.
That's why we stopped.
Do you know what you're going to be doing in August?
I don't know for sure. We've got lots of big things, important things on track for this year. So I'm focused on getting all of those things in place and being open to what the next chapter will be.
Well, you've been a great leader in so many ways, including on the important front of STEM and also realizing Maryland's jobs potential by improving our skills for cybersecurity. Huge delta of opportunity. I mean, the fact that employers like NSA and the contractors that do the work that supports NSA are waiting in line for our graduates is a message of hope and opportunity that I hope a lot of high school kids who, are seeing a lot of negative forecasts on the news may see that as a positive forecast. And to have such a community college in Anne Arundel County that of such excellence, it's really the way the country's going. I mean, we can't expect to do higher education as we had in the past. The ability to be flexible, to appreciate that people or moms and dads are going to be coming back for that, what Thomas Friedman calls their own extra that allows them to get the new job or to open up the door in maybe an entirely new field or career, and the ability to take folks that were liberal arts majors, bring them back to community college, and then have them re-equipped and upskilled to be able to do cybersecurity. All of that's just so very important, and you've been terrific. So thank you, and also for your friendship.
Well,
it's really been good doing good things with you.
Give that right back to you. Thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege. Thank you all very much.
Thanks, Marnie. Big round of applause. All right, so we are on Secretary's agenda, huh?
Good morning, Governor, members of the board. We have 14 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. There are 4 reports of emergency procurement. We're ready for your questions.
Any questions? This has the allocation of the one-year appropriations that were directed from the alcohol tax, correct?
Correct. The General Assembly this year added an appropriation of $47.5 million to the school construction program. This is in addition to the $265 million that the board funded through the regular capital improvement programs. This is $47 million on top of the $265 million. This is for individual public school improvement projects that meet a school or a community need, and each county or region in the state was allocated some money from the alcoholic beverages tax this year. We today have Howard County at item 12. Howard County has a recommendation.
Come on down. Howard County, Montgomery County, and Anne Arundel County.
Montgomery County is item 11, is item 13, and Montgomery County is asking for its grant of $9 million, and Anne Arundel County is item 14, and they are asking for their recommendation for $5 million. Dr. David Lever could probably keep us straight on all the county school districts. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Good morning. We have the three representatives of the three counties here. If you have any specific questions about the projects, I'm sure they'd be glad to answer any questions that you have.
I was curious in the number of jobs. I know that there are 15,000 jobs that are supported by our AAA bond rating and the investments that we're making, private jobs building public goods. Or maybe I should say private jobs building good things for the public. It's probably a clearer way to say it. And I'm wondering, with this additional $47 million investment in our schools and in school renovations and construction, any idea approximately how much this allocation will support by way of jobs?
We could provide that number for you. I do talk to industry sources from time to time to try and get a sense of how many jobs are created by every $1 million of construction allocation. That number changes, and frankly, I haven't looked into that for some time, so I should be back to them to get an accurate number for you.
And the great thing about going out at this point in time, if there is anything that can be said about the advantageous thing, I should say, it's not great, but the advantage that we have is that the bids are coming in very, very competitively, In other words, we're getting a very good price on this work, important work that for which there's a backlog and a tremendous need. So maybe we'll hear from each of the counties individually. Howard County, you want to tell us what you do and introduce yourself? And this would be Mr. Brown?
Mr. Wayne Crosby, I'm the director of
Mr.
school.
Crosby. Mr. Crosby. I could go either way. You know, I had two. I took a 50-50 shot.
First of all, I'd like to say we have the Howard County school system. We appreciate the consideration of the board and giving us additional funds. We're going to direct these funds to four schools, two of our high schools. We're going to put in a turf fields. We're going to take out the natural lawn fields and the stadiums. This is really going to affect our athletic programs and the safety of the students. It's really difficult to keep up with that natural grass fields as much as those stadiums get used, both community use and the system. We're also one of our high schools, Oakland Mills High School. We've got some considerable repair schedule, lockers, door replacements, security systems. So we're looking forward to it. The system's looking forward to it. And as we've worked with the administrators and staff, they're certainly appreciative of the opportunity to provide these improvements.
Any idea how many jobs they'll support?
I do not.
Can you get back to us?
We can certainly get back to you.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. How about Montgomery County? Mr. Song?
I do. Good morning.
They only had one name listed for Montgomery County.
Easy name to remember. Good morning, Governor and Treasurer and Comptroller. My name is, again, James Song. I'm the Director of Department of Facilities Management at Montgomery County Public Schools. And on behalf of Joshua Starr, who's our new superintendent of the school, and along with members of the Board of Education, I'd really like to take this opportunity to thank Governor and the General Assembly for dedication of the supplemental appropriation that was dedicated for school construction project. As noted, of the $47.5 million of the supplemental appropriation, approximately $9 million was earmarked for Montgomery County. With respect to this additional $9 million, we have four school construction projects that is recently completed that will be contributed towards. It'll be the Kevin John Middle School Modernization Project, Cannon Road Elementary School Modernization Project, Farmland Elementary School Modernization Project, and Garrett Park Elementary School Modernization Project. So these dollars are spreading to larger projects and making more impact. Again, thank you on behalf of the school. However, we do have many more needs than the resource, as always. I'm pretty sure it's following the similar lines with all the school districts in the state of Maryland. We have student enrollment growth that is really unprecedented, and just within Montgomery County Public Schools, we're reaching almost 147,000 students. Just last 4 years alone, we have an increase of 8,600 students. Furthermore, next 5 years, we're projecting 10,000 more students coming into our schools. That's almost like 2,300 students per year. That's whole high school per year. Just the capacity needs is not just the one needs, but we also have older, aging facilities that we need to keep up with. And these are continuing needs, and all these additional funds will go into those needs in most time. And also, it is the message that we've been spreading, and that is now is really time to build. As Governor, you have stated, now is really time to build, given the construction cost that's really low in the past 4 years. We also have low bond interest rates, meaning less to borrow, meaning value of the dollars can stretch further these days. And we have the needs. We have the student growing student enrollments, as well as the workforce out there that could use the jobs. And maybe this could be the avenue to revive some of the local and statewide economy as well. So this is really all the planets lined up. So to that end, we urge you to consider increasing the school construction budget. Again, you have the school board and superintendent. We thank you for the supplemental appropriation.
Mr. Song, thank you. I look forward to meeting Josh sometime.
Likewise, he is as well. He's along with a new board member, he's setting his framework and charge to lead the school system. So he's quite tied up with many missions, but I'm pretty sure he'll be very interested.
Can you help me follow up with the new superintendent? I'd really like to meet him. You all had a very good program there that Dr. Wiest implemented on student stat or whatever the or
yes.
I forget the name that you applied to it, but in essence it was performance measurement.
That's correct.
As applied to the entire school district. You'd bring in your highest performing, highest achieving leadership teams, principals, and the others, and they would be in a joint session of discussing tactics, strategies, and the effectiveness of those things. And there's a lot of cross-pollinization of good ideas and best practices and things that worked. I hope he's going to keep that up.
Absolutely. I think it's a stepping stone towards a better achievement. And as Dr. Weiss and I was here to the previous testimony provided, and I know you had a lengthy discussions with him about that issue. So it is a model that we're continually building upon.
I wish the other big jurisdictions would follow suit. I mean, we very dutifully walk across the hot coals of, you know, tax issues and other things in order to provide higher and higher record years of funding, not only in operating, which we've done every year in the 4 years of this recession, but every year on capital, record amounts. We're one of only 17 states that invests in school construction, believe it or not. I mean, in other states, they just don't do that. I think in Pennsylvania, they leave that to the, whatever it's called, the mill rate or the mill tax, and the Cranberry townships to go raise it themselves, I believe. Anyway.
Over 60%. About 60% of our general obligation bond money every year goes to education.
That's correct.
Goes to the schools and the university.
And while other states, are doing less because of the recession, we're doing more because of the recession because
exactly.
We know so many people in construction trades are out of work. So, so look, one of the things we do poorly though is as we fill the pot and do these formulas is we have yet to come up with a good mechanism that incentivizes best practices that work. In other words, I mean, what do you have to do to encourage the other jurisdictions to do what Dr. Weiss did in Montgomery County with a performance measurement system? I mean, just keep asking? Or it seems to me that we should have a discussion about using a portion of the colossal amount of money that we allocate to education to seed the expansion of best practices. How do you all keep your computers going? Is that something you contract out, or do you have people in-house that keep your computer labs up and running and all the screens?
It's a little bit of both. We have a minimal number of staff that keeps merely the maintenance portions of it, but the majority of the refreshment rates, it's currently budgeted for every 4 years. We try to recycle the technology, including not only the computers, but Promethean boards and other technology infrastructures.
And you rightly contract for that, right?
Yes.
I mean, you don't try to compete and have people in-house that do that.
No, I think it would be too much of a resource to manage.
Yeah, there's some school systems that haven't gotten that basic practice down.
Right.
Imagine what we could do if we actually combined buying power. I mean, there's 24 individual school districts out there. I'm not aware of any of them joining forces on contracts together for even something as basic as toner cartridges for their Xerox machines.
Yeah, we often piggyback on different contracts that we think is the best value. But I'm not certain about technology in particular, but across the procurement process, we try to find the best practices to share the experiences and knowledge and try to find the best value for the dollar.
And you've done some great stuff in terms of leasing out some of your – you probably have a larger cachet. I mean, your fleet of school buildings is probably more modern than any other jurisdiction in the state. I'm not saying you don't have older buildings, but, I mean, overall compared
right.
to others – and. Surely you've walked through the schools of Baltimore City
yes, I have.
For a tour through, you know, historic architecture. But you've done a great job. Is the solar contracts for the lease of your rooftops, do you have those on an ongoing basis? And those contracts are working to your advantage, aren't they?
Yes, we have implemented that program about 7 years ago. And further, I think recent as 5 years ago with a tax benefit to the vendors, we are able to lease out the rooftops surfaces that the roof is going to be lasting at least 20 years. We're leasing out that term, where it's at no cost to us for the initial capital investment, but yet we get a break on the utility rate that we're buying back at a lower cost. So we're able to further reduce the energy and utility cost budget by significant margin for the past 5 years.
Why do you think the other school districts can't figure out how to do that?
I think that movement is spreading. I heard a variety of different success stories, University of Maryland and a few others that I visited. I think that success story is continuing. But I think it's important that it's a partnership. From a vendor standpoint, they continually need support of such a tax incentive to be able to make their numbers work.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have this vast amount of rooftop surfaces that are pretty much asphalt that can be utilized at virtually no cost. So I think it's a win-win situation in both cases.
They're all one-story buildings, so they certainly take up a lot of rooftop. Okay. Well, look, thank you.
Thank you.
We next have from, not to be overlooked by any means, from Anne Arundel County, Mr.
Not a mister.
No.
Alex Schechtovis is not here. I'm Lisa Seaman Crawford.
Hello, Lisa.
I'm acting director of facilities.
And so what are you guys going to be doing with your dollars? You have $5 million as part of this Speaker's prerogative amendment to the alcohol bill.
We're very excited. We would like to use $5 million for an addition to Annapolis High School. Beginning in the fall of 2012, Annapolis High School will be hosting performing and visual arts magnet program. We currently have one going on at our Bates Middle School and Brooklyn Park Middle School, so this will be an opportunity to move up to the high school level. In the addition, we will be including some standard classrooms and some specialized areas for the performing and visual arts. We will include dance studio, art rooms, recording studios, control rooms, that type of learning environment. And we will be reducing the relocatables there. The addition will feature high performance standards.
Any idea how many jobs?
What we use as a rule of thumb for an elementary school, 200 to 300 workers. So we would imagine, you know, something of this size, we'd be looking maybe around 100.
Okay. We should make sure that whenever these come back again, Kevin Larch, that there's such a disconnection in our world today between the choices we make together and their impact on the economy we share together. That it would be really, really good before these items come back next time that we have a better sense of how many jobs are created, because that's in addition to giving our workforce the high level of skills that quality education provides, providing some much-needed construction work at this time is also a huge public goal. So, well, that's great. We're excited for you all.
Thank you. Governor, I think it's important to also point out, and you did mention the fact that this project is going to allow you to remove a good number of temporary buildings.
Yeah.
What do you call learning?
Learning shacks.
Learning shacks. Learning cottages, and put students into real schools.
Yeah.
And not only are the jobs that this creates important in doing this, but the fact that students are going to be learning in and teachers teaching in real modern classrooms, I think has a very significant impact on the students and on the workforce down the road.
Sure does. Mr. Controller?
Yes, thank you, Governor. Just to put the jobs issue in perspective, in our great state, we need 240,000 jobs. Last year, we produced on a net basis 382. So the public side is doing their contribution of capital, but the private side obviously has not joined in. And that's the issue that we need to face down the road. And it's a huge dilemma when you look at the scale of what needs to be done. But I have a couple of questions for Howard and Montgomery. If I could, Anne Arundel, I'm fine on. You're always terrific. And I appreciate Dr. Cousin and his leadership of the Howard County Public School System. But let me ask about the artificial turf that you recommend, you referenced in your presentation. What's the rationale for making turf fields such a high priority? Is this Montgomery? No, I want Howard is the one I'm interested in, because your $2 million is being requested to install and maintain artificial turf at the Athelton and Hammond High School.
This is really where the community comes in also. We talked, you guys mentioned in the beginning that there were school-based projects and community-based projects. What this is going to do is it's going to allow the Howard County Department of Parks and Recreation to utilize these fields also, which at the time we cannot, because the wear on the field will not allow extensive use. So really what we're doing now is anytime we're using the stadiums is actually for games. There's no opportunity for practice on these fields or any type of community use of these fields. So we chose these two particular schools because there are very limited sites and there are very limited areas for students to practice.
Okay.
In some cases, we actually have to send them to a neighboring school to use their practice fields because of the limited site we have at these two particular high schools.
And the life span, typical lifespan of a turf field is what?
I think the ones that we're looking to put down there, we should get 20 years of those fields.
Okay. And you receive, Howard County receives very high marks from Dr. Lieber's school maintenance survey, and I appreciate that, but there were some concerns in the last report that Dr. Lieber had about leakage in multiple places in the school system, stained ceiling tiles, et cetera. One of the schools mentioned was Bushy Park Elementary, which is only 4 years old. And I'm obviously comfortable with approving the request as you have it presented to us, but can you give me some assurance that Bushy Park Elementary and other schools are going to be, if they still have these leakage issues? And this is a small issue, I understand it, but it's symbolic that you're addressing this.
Right after we received that report, we looked into it. And it's actually, that was a problem that was created during the construction. It was a condensation problem with the HVAC system. It wasn't any roof leaks or infiltration from the outside. It was a condensation issue with HVAC.
It's a relatively,
minor, easy and
maintenance minor issue.
Yeah,
thank
that's
you.
Correct.
Makes me feel better. If I could just ask Montgomery, you know, that same maintenance survey report of Dr. Lieber's that was good for Howard was not very good for Montgomery, frankly. Of the 24 schools that were surveyed in Montgomery County, only one was judged superior.
Mm-hmm.
Eight schools were simply ranked adequate.
Mm-hmm.
Half the schools received unsatisfactory ratings as far as the roofing. And many of the schools had stained ceiling tiles. And Dr. Lieber's inspectors reported the presence of mold-like discoloration and damaged ceiling tiles in several surveys, indicating the leaks are not yet being addressed in a sufficiently timely manner. You know, it's a great school system. You guys are exceptional. But we've authorized almost $1 billion for you guys over the last 30 years. And they're big investments that your taxpayers have made, myself included, in Montgomery County. What are we doing to make sure that the next report Dr. Lieber gives us, I take it at the end of the year, is going to show progress being made on taking care of what you have?
Well, I think it's twofold. Just to give you kind of magnitude to what we're dealing with is that Montgomery County Public School has 200 schools and over 24.5 million square foot of building to accommodate 147,000 students, and that does not even include 350 portable buildings that we have to accommodate the most growth in our elementary schools. We have very limited number of staff in division of maintenance. That budget always has been cut to reduce. So our work order system is in a backlog, but we're trying to improve in terms of response time to address those things. And our focus in last year and a half since November of 2010 is to sustain the building, sustain the life cycle of our existing buildings. If we're projecting modernizing our buildings every 40 to 50 year period, we got to invest in our systemic replacement program, such as HVAC, roofs, ceiling tiles, all these interior renovations that needs to keep up if it is any different than your own houses. You've got to change your water heaters and furnaces and roofs every so many years to do that. Well, that takes dollars, and it's about priorities. Now, we have ever-growing snow enrollments, capacity issues that we need to address. At the same token, we have modernizations that has been long listed years to go, and yet we got 24.5 million square foot of buildings that's to maintain. So we are urging our local board and the county council and the county executive to increase the school funding. While the economic forecast is not that great, but our support from the state as well as the county executive and county council, we're hoping to put that put the education still in a priority in terms of maintaining our building. So it's a two front.
Yeah,
yes, we're trying to maintain those logs to a minimum and trying to be responsive to that as quick as possible. But at the same time, we're trying to rally for more money to support our existing infrastructure program.
Okay. You might tell the county council and others that you have to petition that when I go around the state and present Silver Hammer Awards to schools in other jurisdictions where the maintenance is much superior to Montgomery County's, and obviously they have a lot of budgetary demands, that inevitably at every school that gets the superior rating from Dr. Lever behind you, and this is based on 37 engineering criteria, it's not a subjective, the landscaping's nice. This is in-depth, and these folks are taking care of what they have. Inevitably, every single one of those Silver Hammer schools has superior academic performance.
Right.
The kids do better because there's a synergy. There's a Dr. Smith mentioned the team effort. There's a team effort between the school, the administration, the faculty, the kids, the parents, the support staff, custodial staff, that I think leads to higher academic performance. And the data shows that around the country.
I certainly agree with you.
Please reverse this trend. I don't, get the job done, and because we are all proud of the shiny new schools, but if they're not well taken care of, we're losing a lot of money.
Right, and I think I share that from a perspective of Montgomery County Public School, as well as the state, had many successes in student achievement, mainly because one of the contributing factors is this learning environment. We recognize that. And as I stated before, it's about priorities.
Right.
We have, as I stated in my testimony, we have growing needs.
Hopefully we can make progress in the next report. And I also just want to mention I stopped at my home high school, Montgomery Blair High School in Silver Spring, earlier this last week to announce a financial literacy petition drive. And everyone there, Principal Johnson and teacher Mr. Murley, the whole Montgomery Blair team were great ambassadors for your system. I know this is an issue the governor has supported in the legislature, and we haven't quite pushed it over the goal line, but we're optimistic we'll get it through. I know the treasurer is interested in financial literacy also, but it's a great visit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
Anything else on this? Okay. Anything else on the secretary's agenda?
Please, Appendix 2.
Right. Why don't we? These were items. Let's vote on 12, 13, and 14, so these folks can get back to work. And so, treasurer moves approval of items 12, 13, and 14 on the secretary's agenda, seconded by the comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. Congratulations. See you guys. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry, Mr. Comptroller.
Appendix two
is the relocation, a report of an emergency procurement to relocate the Maryland Higher Education Commission. And it was reported by the Department of General Services, Secretary Collins. I believe Dr. Howard is here. Maybe Secretary Collins could introduce the item.
Sure.
Yeah, Dr. Howard, have her come up, whichever.
Okay, Mr. Comptroller, Appendix two is the final report from the Department of General Services relative to the relocation of the Maryland Higher Education Commission from Annapolis to the city of Baltimore, from a private lease space to public lease space, which the state owns. We declared and notified the board on May 11, 2011, that we intended to take this action. After a prolonged discussion, some discussions with the department during early and during spring, and we, this is the report of the final results of that particular action.
Great. Welcome.
Good morning.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Danette Howard, Interim Secretary of the Maryland Higher Education Commission.
Okay. Great. Terrific. Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, I have a couple of questions, if it's okay, Governor. The materials I got justify this emergency procurement because, quote, there's an immediate and urgent need to have MHEC, Higher Education Commission, and the State Board of Education, immediate and urgent need to have them working in close proximity for the benefit and welfare of Maryland students from pre-kindergarten through post-secondary education. So my question is, these two agencies have always existed apart. Immediate and urgent are not two adjectives that come right to my head when I think of the two agencies. And I can kind of see an argument that their administrative ties should be strengthened, but what is the kind of breathless, immediate, and urgent need for these two agencies to suddenly come under one roof and have the taxpayers pay a $100,000 penalty for breaking a lease, among other things?
Mr. Comptroller, may I just speak before Dr. Brown, if you don't mind?
Sure.
In the process of discussion, this particular item, we explored those items. And in fact, Assistant Secretary Gaines can talk to the numbers if you want to do that in terms of the fiscal impact. But the usual process that we would have used to relocate this agency, these two agencies together, would have taken 2 years. That was way too long, but beyond what the department said to us that they needed to accomplish their outcome. So the only way we could accomplish this was to declare the emergency, which we notified the board, and then go in this direction.
Yeah, but if I could just ask, you've triggered a non-competitive emergency procurement that, take it, could be applicable to almost anything.
Well, based upon the...
If it takes 2 years to do a contract bid, which I'm not aware of the exact time, why is that... why are we employing this procedure for this situation? What's the logic?
If I may.
What is the urgency?
We are in the middle of working on several statewide and national initiatives and efforts along with the Maryland State Department of Education. One, for example, is the development of our statewide longitudinal data system, which Treasurer will answer the question that you posed earlier to Dr. Smith. Are we tracking our STEM graduates into the workforce? Well, the system that we are currently designing with MSDE will allow us to do just that, and that is part of our Race to the Top grant. So we have historically worked closely with MSDE, but there is really an urgent need because of many of these efforts that are underway now for us to work much more closely with them. The co-location would certainly facilitate those efforts as well as maximize some of the efficiencies that can be gained between the two agencies. For example, right now we are operating two completely different information technology platforms and systems. There's certainly much integration that could happen between our two agencies that would really promote the work that we are trying to do, which will ultimately really benefit all of our students. So we do see this as an urgent and pressing need.
Okay, but you're not aware of this because you weren't here last board meeting. We had a big to-do about the cloud. We're going on the cloud.
That's right.
Lots of money being spent.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem with communicating over the cloud. You don't have to be in the same building to communicate over the cloud.
The cloud is really what is going to support our longitudinal data system, but there's still information technology needs that each individual department has and that will continue to persist into the future even after we develop our longitudinal data system. Just the regular maintenance of our computers, software, the collection of data, not only from all of our local education agencies, but also from each of our post-secondary segments and institutions. And so that's certainly something that we can get some considerable efficiencies from by co-locating our agencies.
Okay, I can kind of see that argument, but a much more compelling argument for me from a policy standpoint, rather than putting you up with MSDE, I could see it being beneficial to put the state's two higher ed governing bodies, MHEC and U.S., the system, Maryland system, under one roof.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever consider the efficiencies and benefits of you being housed in the same roof as the system?
Well, that's a perspective that some people have, but the truth of the matter is that what MHEC does and is responsible for is much different than what the University System of Maryland is responsible for. So MHEC has broad coordinating responsibilities for all the post-secondary segments in the state, which in addition to USM include our 16 community colleges, our private career schools, and our independent colleges and universities. So, for example, any time an institution in the state of Maryland wants to have a new program approved, it is MHEC that has that responsibility, not the University System of Maryland. And it would, in fact, be inappropriate, in my opinion, to have MHEC combined with USM for that reason. I think that sometimes people
don't... I was just saying under the same roof. You have the same constituency that they do.
Part of the same constituency, but we have also a much broader constituency.
I can say that, I mean, just from an administration standpoint, Mr. Comptroller, that in advance of the last legislative session, we looked at a number of opportunities for greater co-location and greater coordination that in the long term could also save us dollars. The legislature was not keen on the notion of merging MHEC into making it a subdivision of the Department of Education. We were willing to go that route. We felt we needed to think differently, and we were also firmly of the belief that there's been a sort of pendulum swing of too much specialization, not just in government, but you know, throughout our institutions, public and private, in the Western world, and that putting things back together for a greater coordination and a more comprehensive understanding of the challenges ahead was the way to go. Legislature disagreed. They didn't want to approve that. But we do believe there's a benefit to be brought about by the co-location. We looked at the potential for combining the two, but given MHEC's role as regulator, as referee, as traffic cop, and certainly the newspapers filled with stories of Morgan and Towson State and other universities having to rely on that traffic cop function. We thought it was that putting the regulator in the same office space as the entity being one of the big entities, biggest entity being regulated, would be like putting the Public Service Commission, if you will, inside spare space at Constellation Energy. Might create some rental savings, but wasn't good for the overall thrust of the independence of that group. We also looked at the possibility of merging DNR with the Department of Environment. We didn't ultimately put in a bill to do that, but we looked seriously at that. It is combined in other states. The one exercise in that review that did come to fruition in state law was the combining of all of those regulatory functions for aquaculture in one place, namely DNR.
If I may say one more thing, we've received some national acclaim for our approach to our educational enterprise, mainly for the collaborative way that our higher education and post-secondary institutions work with our pre-K through 12 partners. And this would really just be a natural extension of our work and would further the efforts that we've already begun.
And if I could add to that, while the kudos for what we do under the umbrella of alignment, that is to say, making sure that when a student graduates from high school, that they're able to succeed in that first year of either a four-year or community college, is better than most states. In the P-20 Council, when we gather, we still identify that as one of our areas where there's the greatest opportunity for improvement.
That's
I mean,
right.
We're better than other states at that, but It's also an area where we see a tremendous amount of disconnection, lack of coordination, and a disjointed approach to the student career endeavor.
Okay. Well, I can see that. We're solidifying the concept of K through 16 with this. But that's, you know, I happen to disagree on the analogies, but that's okay. I want to shift and ask the Secretary, if I could, about the State of Maryland's facilities master planning process, because there seems to be a confusion as to whether it's better for the state to own space or rent space.
Could I just say, I don't want to interrupt your line, but I do have a couple more questions when you're through.
On that subject, feel free. I'll let you...
The witness will return to the stand.
Yes, ma'am.
You
did touch on the diverse roles of and functions and responsibilities of the MHET.
Yes.
And I do think the coordinating with pre-K through 12 is very important.
Yes.
But a major function of MHET always was to be not a governing agency, but the coordinator and the buffer.
Absolutely.
And in fact, it was given the powers it was given, as I recall, about 25 years ago, because the community colleges, the independent colleges, Morgan, St. Mary's, required it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the treasurer knows that because she wrote the bill. And
it was a long time ago, and my memory is like a steel sieve, I've been told. But I assume that this continues to be a significant function, although maybe 25 years
Absolutely.
Of relative cooperation.
It certainly does, yes. And we meet regularly with the leaders of each of those segments that you just mentioned.
So when you're housed on Baltimore Street, or what was Baltimore
yes.
Street, some of your functions are in close coordination with K through 12.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them really quite distinctly
different. Absolutely. Yes.
How are you going to maintain that clarity of difference and role? I know the number of people at MHEC has been reduced significantly.
Yes.
Funding is very difficult for all of us.
That's correct. Well, a practical way that we will continue to distinguish ourselves from MSDE is that we are located in completely separate areas of the building. So we have different floors,
so you'll have a different
and are not commingled.
Different store.
We do. We actually have our own address. So MSDE is 200 West Baltimore Street. Our entrance is on the other side of the building at 6, will be at 6 North Liberty Street, I believe.
Okay.
So that's one way that we will continue to distinguish ourselves. And then we will also meet regularly with our post-secondary partners, continue to have our separate commission meetings. We will have some shared space with MSDE as far as meeting rooms and things like that. But we plan to continue to operate in the way that we have in our current location.
Do you have... are you setting out any indices of accomplishment which will show how the non-K through 12 part of your role is being accomplished? I mean, for instance, you still have student financial assistance.
Absolutely, yes.
So the question is how quickly and how well the student financial assistance gets out, how...
Yes, so we do some of that through our annual Managing for Results report that we submit to DBM every year. But you're right, I think that we could do more to really clarify the role that we play, financial aid and the disbursement of financial aid being a major one, program approval being another one, research, providing research and policy analysis to the state being another one. So in terms of distributing that on a regular basis, we don't, but that's certainly something that we should probably do.
I mean, they used to, years ago, MHEC and its predecessor actually put out an annual book with its seal on it.
Right.
With a lot of very important information. This was before everything was on the Internet, and, and you don't necessarily need that any longer. But it did imprint on people's minds the function.
Right.
The function of the MHEC. And I am a little concerned that I know you're the acting secretary, as secretary, as I understand it.
Yes.
I am a little concerned that as long as MHEC remains and its legal functions and responsibilities remain, there has to be some way to make this clear to the public and
sure.
all the players, or it, it will become an issue only when there is a crisis. And at that point, I mean, there have been some over the past years. At that point, the credibility of the institution in its other role.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more questions.
No, I think that you raise a very good point, and that's something that we can certainly go back and look at how we can continue to get our message out there that we are a standalone entity and that we are providing some very important services to Marylanders.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Madam Treasurer. If I could return to the larger issue, which is what is the state's philosophy on the merits of owning versus renting? Both of the state's signature transit-oriented development initiatives, the State Center Project and the pending move of DHCD headquarters, it's the planning agency, from Crownsville to New Carrollton, involve government agencies moving from state-owned space to leased space. And in the last year, we've approved significant contracts for other state agencies, $22 million for the Attorney General to lease space, $12 million annually for the State Center Project, lease space, $63 million for the Department of the Environment and Maryland State Lottery to lease space for 12 years, $10 million for Office of Administrative Hearings for 11-year lease. And I guess the question I have is, here the opposite is going on. We're moving from lease space to state-owned space. And I just question the ad hoc nature of us approving these things in the absence of an overall consistent philosophy and plan, and that's why I asked, do we have an updated facilities master plan to deal with this issue of the merits of owning versus renting? And I guess what are your thoughts on this? Because we seem to be doing a little bit here, a little bit there, all on a helter-skelter basis.
Well, Mr. Comptroller, you've started commingling a couple of issues there, so I won't get into that. We can talk offline on that. Well, that was those particular issues. Some of those are lease renewals where agencies have been there over term. We've renewed those leases based upon the efficiency of those locations, and also making sure that we had sufficient returns and investments on those state dollars. I will ask the Assistant Secretary Gaines to come up in a second to talk about our specific approaches, but we in fact are following the approach that the governor laid out at the beginning of his administration, which was to look at every lease that we had and where we could to try to locate appropriate state agencies together in state-owned spaces. We've done that where appropriate. There are space needs and locations where we don't have state spaces available. We have to obviously renew those leases or what have you. So there's a combination. But we are in fact following a strategic approach and following the best practices in each one of these deals. Mr. Gaines, would you?
Yes, good morning. Michael Gaines, Assistant Secretary, Department of General Services. Secretary is absolutely correct. And it starts from, I guess, two premises. One, that the governor issued an executive order at the beginning of his first administration that mandated DGS to look at the entire leased portfolio and to have us find ways of becoming more efficient and more effective in leased space, recognizing that the entire occupied portfolio for the state represents about 11 million square feet. About 6 million of that is in owned space, which is about 99% occupied. The balance of that is in leased space, and we've been leasing space for decades. And also with the recognition that the legislature and the administration, given the capital budget constraints, is probably not going to build new office buildings. The state hasn't built a new office building since it built Crownsville about 20 years ago. And prior to that, probably didn't build a new office building after it built State Center. So there's a recognition that we have to occupy lease space, but if we do, we're going to do it in the context of a very strategic approach to work with the agencies in a rational approach to strategic planning on a five-year basis to determine what are the best opportunities for owned and leased space occupancy. Over the last few years, we've been working with C.B. Richard Ellis and Birch Advisors to accomplish some of these goals. We have, in fact, reduced the amount of space and our occupancy costs in leased space. We have found opportunities like moving MPEC to own space where we can, and we believe that those are all well-intentioned, strategically thought-out aspects of managing an 11 million square foot portfolio.
Okay. Each time these leases have come up before the board, I've raised concerns, and others have, about how the transactions appear to be just in a planning vacuum.
You know, well, I can assure you they're not.
If you have a comprehensive space master plan, which you're using as a basis for decision making, if you could share it with me and anyone else on the board who's interested, because I'm not aware of it. And so all of these leases that you bring before us and the one today, which I take it is justified by the $411,000 saving minus the $100,000 penalty.
Well, actually, the savings when compared over a 10-year renewal option on a net present value basis would be about $2.5 million.
Okay. And here's our problem. I mean, obviously, there's a context for each of these proposals that come forward.
And I can assure you that there is.
Yeah. The problem is we don't have it. I don't have it. I don't see any context. And, you know, I understand the savings of $2.5 million, and but I disagree pretty strongly as far as the policy. I think this agency, if anything, should be put over near the with the system, and that's over in Adelphi, great county of Prince George's. That's where, if it's going to be moved, that's where it ought to be moved to on a policy standpoint. But you've got the justification of saving money. All I'm saying is I read off all these lease arrangements where a lot of money is not being saved, apparently.
Well, actually, in many of those lease deals, particularly the one you quoted from MDE and
Lottery
at Montgomery Park,
yes.
For the renewal term, I don't remember exactly, but I believe that savings represented several million dollars over the next term of those leases.
Okay, that's so fine, but it's still $63 million in lease payments, which you're claiming in this instance is the one of the main reasons why you're justifying moving from a state-owned to a from a lease to a state-owned. All I'm asking is, they appear to me, not to you apparently, but to me, as if it's an ad hoc, case-by-case, every contract and move has got its own little impetus behind it, which may or may not make sense. And I'm just asking for where's the overview so that we who are approving these contracts, you know, can look at that, I guess, facilities master plan and put it into a standardized approach to this issue of owning versus leasing.
Mr. Comptroller, I think we have strategic approaches, and each one of these deals are looked at differently based upon those approaches. And each one of the leases that you have approved, in fact, state out what the savings are, what terms we have come with, and the board has approved those. So we can go back and document that for you if you need to. But we do think we have an approach that are benefiting the state, and we're implementing best practices based upon the real estate market as we know it.
Well, Mr. Gaines indicated you do have a comprehensive space master plan. If you could share that with me, that would be great.
Sure, Madam Treasurer.
I must say I have been persuaded for some time by Mr. Klassmeyer's concern about a master plan, but I'm now beginning to rethink what a master plan means. Are you saying that you have criteria by which to judge which decision
Absolutely.
Is appropriate
yes.
in it, rather than just a plan.
Yes, I think it's a...
Absolutely.
It's probably a misnomer. And if I convey that we have a master plan, I didn't mean to. What we intend to say is that we have a strategy, that we have criteria, and that we have a mandate from the governor to create the most efficient and effective portfolio. And so when we look at leases, it's in the context of an agency's plan of program implementation. We then evaluate all of their space and determine where can we find opportunities for savings, opportunities for owned space. We go through a step-by-step process with the assistance of our private contractor. We do financial analysis on every deal. We look at it in the context of an overall thought for that agency. So there is a strategy, there is a process, and there are criteria. One of the things we've done as a result of the governor's executive order, DGS looked at its standards for space. And at one time, an executive, a secretary, my own boss, you know, would reside in about 250 square feet of space with four walls. Well, we changed that. You know, secretaries now, when they move in a new space, you know, are going to be in less space. And so we're looking at everything to identify ways of saving.
No more jacuzzis?
No, sir. No more jacuzzis.
No more steam bath?
No, sir. In fact, everyone, and we're taking down walls, and which has happened at Montgomery Park, a very sustainable built building where you've got everyone on the floor access to light because the walls for offices are gone. It's improved the environment. It's reduced our costs. And so there is a strategy to our plan.
And is this strategy, these criteria, are they written down somewhere?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
They absolutely are.
All right.
The agencies know what approaches we're using. We negotiate with them on their needs, and then we go through this master checklist on every deal that we bring here, and it's outlined as what we've done and what the decision we make.
And do you go through periodically? I know we talked about this in the prior administration of go through evaluating which properties can be privatized. Done away with. I don't think they found many. Everything foundered on the World Trade Center, as I recall. But, and it's not that I'm a keen advocate of that either, don't get me wrong. But is that part of this process?
Absolutely. The Assistant Secretary mentioned the talent that C.B. Richard Ellis has brought us in this
right.
process, again, thanks to the governor's leadership. We have now, we've really professionalized and brought to real-world terms our approach to managing our properties. So that is part of what we look at.
Scanning.
Absolutely.
We, just to tell you, when I came, with Governor and Secretary Collins, we did not have an effective database to manage the portfolio. We were using cobbled together spreadsheets. We now have an effective online database where we manage the portfolio. We can tell you every conversation we've had with every landlord. And that ties back to a strategy with that agency about that space.
Okay. Can I just ask a question?
Thank you.
Because I just think this is worse than I thought. Because let's just throw into the mix the 35 or so transit-oriented developments which we're looking at. I think five or six have been approved by the BPW. As far as I can tell, that's just out there. Floating and accelerating that transit-oriented development for Prince George's County is the rationale in part for moving the Department of Housing and Community Development to New Carrollton. So what's the plan for the building they're leaving?
Good question. We have actually begun conversations with the Anne Arundel County Department of Economic Development to evaluate a return of that property to the tax base, along with the Crownsville Hospital site. And the folks at Anne Arundel County actually have said, well, that's great. If we can have this property returned to the tax base, that improves the public benefit of this move. In addition to that, the move fosters another one of the governor's agendas, which is smart growth, TOD, job creation. This move will create 300 jobs in construction, 80 permanent jobs long term, and it uses the power of our occupancy to stimulate economic development at the local level. So while it would be great for us to have capital dollars to build this, we don't. The alternative is to work with the private sector to afford the opportunity for an agency like the Housing Department to be closer to its customers. PG has, as you know, great problems of foreclosures.
Michael, we call it Prince George's.
I'm sorry, did I say?
Yes, you
my
did.
Bad. I'm sorry. Prince George's County.
Gorgeous Prince George.
Gorgeous. I know I'm in trouble now. But the idea is that we're using the power of our occupancy to create economic stimulus in local jurisdictions.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be too argumentative here because I basically support the New Carrollton project on smart growth. I applaud the governor for picking that site in Prince George's because it makes a lot more sense than some of the other sites. But it certainly raises the issue here when you tell me you're doing – basically, to me, it's your planning after the fact, after the decision. What happens to the building that we own that you're leaving? Well, and all I'm asking is for a overview.
Sure.
And instead, what I'm getting is, oh, well, every one of these we're looking at on a case-by-case basis, and you just don't understand, Mr. Comptroller, what we're doing. Well, yeah, I don't understand it. And
it took us a couple of years to get to a decision to even talk about a relocation of Prince George's, but we're happy to give you the overview.
I'm talking about planning,
mm-hmm.
not because, you know, someone else 3 years from now can say, let's move it back. Haven't been able to sell the Crownsville, privatize it. So let's move them back. And it's that kind of just, hey, this is kind of an idea. We have some storage space up in Baltimore in the State Department of Education where they've been storing boxes and things. Why don't we put MHEC in there?
I think that's a great idea.
You know, it's, you get what I'm talking about. For me, there's no overview. And maybe that's because of the situation you inherited. According to your testimony, happy to take a look at what you have, but you know, I'm likely going to vote against this because of the concern about the emergency nature of the procurement, which I think is ludicrous, and the lack of an overall strategic plan.
And in the meantime, Mr. Gaines and Mr. Secretary, why don't we put together kind of a overview presentation?
Oh, an updated, sure.
Yeah, because I think a lot of us have forgotten about even doing that contract to bring in whoever that private real estate was. Who?
C.B. Richard Ellis.
To bring in private professional help to look at what we own, what we don't own, what we rent. And it isn't just as simple as bottom line, the smart growth, the co-location in this case of similar missions, and you know, the transit-oriented development, those sorts of things, all play into this. The Lottery Commission is in one of those original ones that Governor Glenn Denning did in moving the Department of Environment into the Montgomery Wards building.
Yes, sir.
Inside the city, in a smart growth pocket. In a building that was one of the first in the state to actually have a green roof and to have been rehabilitated in, you know, in a
That's correct.
Green building sort of way.
Yes, sir.
So if you could,
sure,
your very
you
best
you.
At putting together in a comprehensive fashion
sure.
what this one administration's philosophy is. And it is true, one of the vagaries of democracy is that things can always change with every administration. All you need to do is look around at the march of mortality around this wall to see that proof
All right. Anything?
The state house is not on anybody's plan. We're going to stay here.
We're going to stay here.
Thank you.
We're not going to. Although in Arizona they did that, didn't they?
Yes, sir.
Aren't they selling their state house and leasing it back?
No, I can't say that, but we did look at all of the.
We haven't talked to the Board of Public Works about the color the dome should be either, have we? That could be an all-morning conversation. Madam Treasurer, did you have anything to add on this? Okay. Any other items on the secretary? Are we still on the secretary?
That's what I was just saying.
All right. So you all are here because you have to be, not because of the suspense surrounding this item.
I'm taking my medicine right now.
Do you want to vote on this one separately?
No. Yes, I would. Thank
Which
you.
Item was this?
A2, Appendix 2.
Okay, we have Appendix A2. Move.
This is a matter of accepting the report or rejecting the report.
Right. Okay. I'm moving to accept the report, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed. Comptroller votes no. Treasurer and governor vote yes. We now consider the balance of the secretary's agenda. Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it unanimously. We now move on to the Department of Natural Resources.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Meredith Lasbury. For the Department of Natural Resources, we have six items on the agenda today. Also, I'd just like to note that if you approve this agenda, we will be surpassing 1,000 local program open space projects under this administration. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions? Anybody here from local government on any of these?
We do have Jennifer Bistrack. She is here from the city of Annapolis. And this is item number 4, Community Parks and Playgrounds Program. You go down to number 3, Pats Park Playground Renovation at Truxton Park.
Good morning. I'm Jen Bistrack. I'm with City of Annapolis Recreation and Parks. Comptroller Francio opened up with his opening marks, praising the Ravens and the Redskins. And although I'm not a football watcher, I appreciate play and athletics, which often develop at an early age and are facilitated by families, often on public playgrounds and green spaces. Annapolis seeks $58,000 in community parks and playground funding to renovate one of our most heavily utilized parks at Truxton Park. This is a playground. Pat's Playground is within Truxton Park, which has many pavilions. It has miles of hiking and green space and a public pool in the summertime. So we see play out there year-round. We are seeking financial support to renovate to not only help us come up to ADA standards, but also help replace some of the safety structures and to add some benches. I speak on behalf of other municipalities. We rely on this funding throughout the years to help us restore and replace some of the aging infrastructure to help get ahead of some of the safety issues as well as some of the health and recreation issues that we are seeing. We see firsthand in all of our parks and playgrounds that we support a lot of different social economic levels in our community. So Pat's Park and Truxton Park happen to be in a mixed income area, and we see a lot of great connections happening out there on the playground. So that's all I have.
Mr. Comptroller, anything?
No.
Just a personal note, not about this particular playground, but as some people know, I have two grandchildren who are living with me. If you don't know, you haven't been here. But I've taken the opportunity to go to our local parks with them. And I would say two things. First of all, yes, I mean, they are a terrific way to get to know neighbors and to create community, and this is with people with whom this is your linkage, and then you can follow up. And the other is, in part because of the economy, my understanding is at least that these playgrounds and small parks, local parks, are being used much more heavily, particularly during the summer, than they might have otherwise, because people simply are not going away. They're staying home and taking advantage of their community. I knew this intellectually, but you have to be there to have it hit you. And I just want to thank you all for all the work
you're
doing.
Meredith, I know, and Kevin, could you all A lot of these open space things, especially when they involve renovations to parks, or I see in here, I love seeing this all the time now, and whenever we do parking lots in our parks, it always says pervious pavers, which is a new and positive development for the waters of the bay. I'd really like to know how many jobs are created on these things. I mean, so much of what we do here is appropriating, we're the final turn in the bend to allocate dollars to the construction of good things for the public. And I'd like to somehow, I know that's a new one for the Board of Public Works. We kind of took it for granted in the past, but it's no small thing, I think, for people to be able to know that on any given agenda, there are X number of construction jobs that are being made possible by the civic investment of every taxpaying citizen in Maryland.
Absolutely, Governor. We'll look into the exact numbers. I can tell you that we did calculate this within the last year and determined that approximately 300 jobs are supported through Program Open Space as a whole.
Annually.
I mean,
I know some of these, the jobs are supported for the 2 weeks it takes to do the parking lot and the like, but I'd like to know that. Maybe you can work with DBED. I know that they track it as part of our ongoing, you know, jobs goal. So, and those numbers of net new. So far on the calendar year, we have created as a state public and private endeavors. Maybe I need to say nonprofit. All endeavors together, public, private, nonprofit, have created. We're at a net 14,700 net new jobs. More jobs created than we've lost, which is always the goal. And last year, I need to compare notes with the comptroller. I had 11,300 net new jobs. But I know that they track these things at DBED and as part of our goal number one in terms of the delivery unit. So anyhow. All right. Comptroller moves approval.
I love the, Governor, the impervious services that are turning into pervious. And frankly, I'd love to see how, in addition to the jobs, how much we're accomplishing there, because frankly, without you bringing the subject up, I don't think we ever even would have paid attention to it. And it's, I think, is going to have a significant impact if it's being applied as I suspect it is.
We could, so, could you imagine what a great public works program we could do by all of those schools? Maybe we need to take a portion of school construction dollars and allocate them each year to a competitive grant fund for retrofitting giant swaths of blacktop. There's two things every principal loves as an architectural element. One is blacktop. A close second is chain link fences. When they get their degrees to become principals of school, I'm convinced there is an architectural design course on how to maximize blacktop and chain link fences. I wonder how much blacktop we could remediate with a competitive annual grant of $10 million taken out of school construction. Okay. Well, that word ought to get back. Okay, Comptroller moves approval of the open space agenda, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. And I love your maps. Great maps in here. We have the best maps, I think, of any Board of Public Works or similar board in the United States of America. That can I see in Washington County, the Howell purchase, where preserving and expanding that that stream base as it feeds into the Potomac, a river that has greatly improved its water quality, thanks mostly due to the farmers on the Maryland side of the Potomac. We now go into the Department of Budget and Management.
Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer, good morning. There are three items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for the day, and I'll be happy to answer your questions.
Questions? Department of Budget and Management.
Move approval.
Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the University System of Maryland, which just missed by the hair of your chinny chin chin being merged today with the Maryland Higher Education Commission.
I was paying close attention to that. So.
We noticed you on the edge of your seat. What do you want to tell us about your agenda items and how many jobs it's creating?
Well, these are relatively small items. There aren't any major construction contracts on here that would involve job creation.
Gotcha.
We have four items on the agenda. Be happy to answer any questions you might have.
And a cop, and I see the purchase of property for the proposed Science and Technology Center.
That's an item that was on the board agenda previously, and there was a math error.
Overall, it's a good project that you've been bringing in lots of property acquisitions for the Science and Technology Center. This was just a catch-up on that one, but we've been doing a lot of them.
We need it up there.
And I do believe College Park won an incredible national award this week from Department of Energy, the Watershed House in Washington, D.C.
How about that? The solar decathlon.
First place. Yes.
Word of that reached me when I was at my 30th high school reunion at Gonzaga College High School, 8 blocks north of the Capitol, because one of my classmates who now in California, actually he's now back here, had been in California, David Parker, before he came to football game followed by mass, followed by dinner, had gone down to the decathlon and came back and told me, Maryland won. University of Maryland won. I think he's a graduate of the University of Maryland.
He's been very successful in that program over the years. In fact, the last, this is inside, the last project that they did, we actually transported that house back to the campus and put it on a permanent foundation. And the local chapter of the AIA actually operates out of that building.
It's great. How about our kids?
Very good.
We did a YouTube shout out for them when they went into the education. Can you get the team down here?
Sure. Absolutely.
Did Under Armour provide uniforms for them?
I could ask, and they may provide.
Solar decathlon uniforms by Under Armour. Protect this house. We'd love to hear from you. Wouldn't it be nice to have a little PowerPoint from the smart kids that are figuring out a better way for us to live in balance with the other living systems of this planet?
I will let them know, and we'll see if we can get the team down here.
Good. So it is written. So it shall be. All right. Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We move to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Beverly Swains Daly, representing Maryland Department of Transportation, and we have 12 items before you today.
Any questions? Department of Transportation, Comptroller moves approval. Treasurer, anything? No? Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. The ayes have it. We now, seems like you've been on for a while. Back again. Department of General Services.
Again, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Department of General Services has 10 items on our agenda. We are withdrawing item 9. I'd be glad to answer any questions you have on the remaining 9 items, any of these items.
Any questions? Treasurer moves approval. Any questions, Comptroller? Comptroller seconds. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. That concludes our agenda. Thank you all very, very much. Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.